This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a special Veterans Day edition of the program that hopes to remind you to treat every day like Veterans Day and give honor to those men and women who have risked their lives so we could be free. I did say men and women, and it's been a thrill over the years to be able to share with you some of the stories of the women of World War II. So many were helping the war effort on the home front as civilians, but there were plenty in uniform, too. I received an email recently from a loyal listener who could never remember hearing a female veteran on the show, and indeed it is pretty rare, but female World War II veterans are pretty rare. During that time, there were more than 50 men in uniform for every woman, and that ratio is reflected in the spectrum of veterans who've shared their stories here. But one very memorable story we heard in March of this year came from Leela Morrison of Windsor, Colorado. 7 decades ago, she was a young nurse from North Georgia who found herself living in a tent near the front lines during the Battle of the Bulge.
I wasn't fearful. I did jump a lot when the big guns went off, and our tent would go, you know, the roof of it.
Yeah.
And you'd just declare it was going to go off, but it never did.
Mm.
No, I didn't worry about that because I knew we were going to win the war.
How'd you know that?
Because we were a Christian nation, and I knew that God had a plan, and we were going to win the war.
What was the first taste of it, really, where you got a sense of what this was going to be like?
Well, when, as I say, we were in tents, that was real different, living in a tent. We were under pressure, it seemed like, because we got our hospital set up. We only took care of emergencies. If we received casualties that we thought would live until they got back behind in a station or general hospital, we sent them back. But if we thought they wouldn't live long enough to make it back, then we accepted them. Our first tent was a doctor and several corps boys. Patients went in there first, and he assessed them, divided them if they thought they could go back or if we had. So my tent was right behind him, and that was shock and pre-op. And my job was to bring fellows out of shock. Then if they were going to do surgery, which most of them had to have, I got them ready for surgery. And I had several corps boys in there with me, helping me. One of the biggest things we did, see, this was back in the 40s, we had no way of preserving whole blood, and that's what all the boys needed. They needed whole blood,
because
if they weren't hemorrhaging, they had been. So this plasma, blood plasma, is what we gave, and that was supposedly at that time the next thing best to whole blood. It was conducted into a powder, and then we had a bottle of sterile water, and we mixed those together and gave them IV as quickly as we could.
And just by the sheer numbers and the reality of what some of these wounds and injuries are, I mean, you're faced with a situation where a good number of these young men who you're trying to help, you know they're not going to make it.
Yes, you did. Unfortunately, that was true.
How hard was that to deal with?
That was hard, very hard, because they were all young. Some of them, I was 22, like I say, and I know some of them were younger than I was. I'm sure they cheated a little on their age if their parents would sign. Oh, some of them never shaved, you know, just real young. But they had a wonderful spirit, every one of them. They were there to win that war. They loved America. They were so thankful to be an American. And even when it meant, and of course, all of them knew any minute could be the last.
Mm.
But none of them ever complained or said, "I'm sorry I came," or any of that.
And you said what your job was. How did that work? You know, I don't want to dwell on gory details or any of that, but so we have a perspective of some of what you saw. Can you give us a sense of what the condition of some of these guys were, why they were in your hospital, and what you guys hoped to do for them?
Well, in order to serve, you had to be in good health.
Well, and what I mean is the nature of the injuries that you saw. I mean, I'm sure you said before nothing could have prepared you for it. You saw guys missing limbs?
Yes.
Missing
limbs. Shot, you know, with as many as we saw, I'd say almost every place. Before we got down on the front, we were with what was called DS, Detached Service, and we worked in those hospitals and took care of, chronically. And many, many of them lost their limbs from frostbite. They would say, well, we were down in this foxhole, and we were there for a week, and it was cold. That was in December. Of course, the foxhole had snow in it, mm-hmm. and it would melt, and they'd have to stand there in the water maybe for several days. I remember one saying, my socks were all wet, my feet were so cold, but nobody had a warm pair of socks. So it lasted long enough that they did get frostbites.
Yeah.
And you know, they'd be so down when they lose a leg, or just so depressed. And you hate to tell them that their leg was gone, or maybe both. But before it was over, when they'd go back behind the lines, they'd be in a ward with others with the same thing. And before you knew it, they'd be having races out in the hall in their wheelchair. All of them laughing and adjusting. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful, wasn't it?
And in this war that claimed millions of lives worldwide and 406,000 American lives, your job was to save lives.
Yes, and it seemed so different, because we were the only ones there saving lives, or trying to, and everybody else was taking lives.
And you said that your job was to take them from shock to pre-op.
Mm.
You've got to try to keep them alive
for
that time period.
Mm.
And when you say bring them out of shock, how do you do that? What are you doing?
With the blood plasma.
So just their body's in physical shock. They can't function.
No. Many times they're passed out.
Yeah, so you can't talk to them, you can't encourage them in that situation. You're just trying to get life-saving plasma so they can make it till the surgeon can operate.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty intense.
Yes, it is. It doesn't get much more intense than that. And we realized it. We knew that. And that's one reason I was so thankful to be there, because I know we saved lives. Of course, we lost a lot, but we saved some, too. That was encouraging to think that you could be there and have the little bit of knowledge it took to bring them out of that shock and get them on their way to recovery.
Did you ever feel like this was too much for you, that you couldn't handle it anymore?
No, I didn't. See, I was just there a year. Maybe if I'd have been there 3 years, it would have.
I think a lot of people, if they were there 3 days.
Well, that's true, but nursing school prepares you for that. And I think my background, being in the small town and being the bottom of 7 children, it helped me a lot.
Toughened you up a little bit?
Yes, I think so.
But you're in a war zone. Mm-hmm. You are on the front lines, and sometimes beyond the front lines. Mm-hmm. There were times where you guys actually set up and didn't know the area wasn't secure yet?
Mm-hmm. Well, 2 times. We crossed the Rhine River and went across on a pontoon bridge. I got over there, and of course, we called them GIs, you know, the soldiers.
Yeah.
Set the tents up and all. And they started doing that, and they sent word and said, no, get them back. This is too close. So we had to go back across the Rhine, and we waited a few days. Not more than 3. Then we crossed at Worms.
And some people are under the mistaken impression that if you are operating a hospital, even a field hospital, an evacuation hospital like you had, that you're somehow safe, that the enemy's not going to shoot you. I think you learned otherwise, didn't you?
Yes, you did. On all of our tents, we had a big Red Cross, great big one, and you could see that from the air. But as we got further down into France and Germany and some of those smaller countries, we were never bombed. They were the girls and lost lives down in Africa and Italy. See, we had the German Air Force pretty well knocked out by the time we got down in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had what they call Bed Check Charlie. You've heard of that?
Every night, right?
Mm-hmm. They'd fly over to see what we're doing. We were under complete blackout, which was a little tougher because you had to go outside the tent in a flip you know.
Yeah.
Pull the curtain back. You tried to hurry because they told us how many feet up you could see that little light and to be very careful.
And so if they saw the light, Bed Check Charlie, this German bomber, knows where to drop his bomb.
Yes, that's right. And we saw mostly the Air Force with the Silver Star,
uh-huh.
our U.S., What a good feeling that was. You'd see many of them, you know, big noise flying over.
I don't want to be melodramatic here, but living with this every day, I mean, from the severe weather, and you're in a tent during the Battle of the Bulge, and you can't take a shower, you can't stay warm. I know you're surrounded by people who are worse off than you are because you're treating them every day. But, I mean, you're just confronted with death on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Did you consider the possibility that you might die over there?
Yes, I did, because I knew some of the hospitals had been bombed. I don't know, mistake or what, but in a situation like that, it's easy to make a mistake. But like I said, we were never bombed. The girls coming up through Africa and Italy, they were, and several of them were killed. But we weren't.
And tell me if this is true. Brad Hoops, who interviewed you here in northern Colorado, shared a little bit of your story with me. He told me that you were ready to die yourself.
I was.
You prayed that if there were nurses that were going to die, let it be you and not those who had a husband and
yes,
children.
I did, because I was young and single, and my siblings were all grown and on their own. And see, my mother and dad were both gone. So I just felt it would be so much easier for somebody like me to lose their life than some of those that had such ties at home. And we had boys, they sort of looked at us like a mother, a sister, aunt. And if we ever had time, they'd show us pictures they'd just gotten. And one that I particularly remembered showed me a snap of a little boy, 3 years old. And he said, "This is my little boy. I've never seen him."
Mm-hmm.
And where he lived and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the boys were, their spirit and their outlook was just tremendous. I can't say enough good about them.
And I'm sure you helped treat hundreds and hundreds of wounded soldiers. Can you still see some of their faces in your memory?
Every Memorial Day, every time I say the Pledge of Allegiance, every time anything real patriotic, yes, I see their faces. One thing that's uppermost, and I think of it so often, the freedom, the wonderful freedom that we have. We tend to take it for granted, and I probably would too if had I not had this experience. But I've seen, like at ball games and different places when they play the national anthem, you'd see the kids playing over here. I mean, high school kids. And that hurt.
Mm.
Or to see somebody burn our flag, that hurts. It really does. Because, the price was high. It was high. And I think of each one of those boys. They loved to live. And they loved their families. And they liked a nice home. And they liked to have enough to eat, just like you and I do, to experience life with all of its goodness and some badness. We all have that. And they didn't get to experience it anymore. Just cut off so short. But like I say, I never heard any of them complain or say, "Why me?" They all were willing. And stand a little straighter when they play the national anthem. I just stand stiff and tall. I can't straighten up anymore, but I try. And how thankful we are.
And how thankful we are to have met Lila Morrison. She would also go on to witness the horrors of the Buchenwald concentration camp. You can hear her memories of that at hometownheroesradio.com. But a couple months after we met Lila, she was one of three veterans honored at the Boulder, one of the biggest races in America with more than 50,000 runners, which culminates with a special Memorial Day tribute at the University of Colorado's Folsom Field. The Boulder produced a short video on Lila. I have that linked for you at hometownheroesradio.com, along with info connected to the other voices you're hearing from today. Right now it's break time again, but when we come back, one of the men who received care from nurses like Lila and one who knows the uncertainty of being a prisoner of war. This special Veterans Day edition of Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.